Hey, welcome to the Chess Experience. On this show, it's all about helping adult improvers. I want to make learning chess easier for you to navigate, and I also want you to have a more fun experience along the way. I'm your host, Daniel Lona, a fellow chess amateur. Let's get to it. This show is sponsored by Chess.com, the world's largest chess community. Chess.com recently launched a new way to learn from your games with a feature called Insights. If you visit chess.com/insights, you can get detailed stats and analysis in any of the time controls you've played and across any time period. What kind of things can you learn? Well, you can learn what time of day do you play your best, morning, afternoon, or night? What part of the game are you strongest or weakest, opening, middle game, or end game? Are you making more or less mistakes than opponents at your level? You can find out all this great info and much more at chess.com/insights. Welcome to this week's show. In this episode, we have former chess journalist and club player Vanessa Sun. A little background on Vanessa. She spent several years writing for US Chess and Chess Space as a journalist covering national and local tournaments. She was also a tournament director at the famous Marshall Chess Club in New York City. She's volunteered for Greg Shahady at the U.S. Chess School, which is a nonprofit that offers free chess coaching to the most promising juniors in the country. Plus, she's helped with after-school chess programs. Aside from all of those chess endeavors, she's an atmospheric chemist and is currently in a PhD program. In this episode, Vanessa and I chat about her chess journey, including what unique insights about chess she's gained from covering tournaments and doing interviews as a chess journalist, why she prefers classical chess and calls herself a blitz hater, and also a brief discussion on whether there's any link between playing chess and being smart. Here's my interview with Vanessa. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Vanessa. How are you doing today?
Hi, Daniel. I'm doing really well.
That's great. I'm super excited to chat with you today. I've known you on, sort of quote-unquote known you on Twitter for a little while as well while you were active with chess Twitter. So had a chance to interact a little bit with you there. But I'm just happy that we get a chance to talk live for an extended time today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here and to just do something chess-related for the first time in a while for me.
Yeah, I'm happy that we get to talk about chess, and we'll cover kind of like all aspects of what you've done in your chess life, so to speak, and even a little bit about what you do outside of chess and have done outside of chess. And actually, we might as well just start with that so people get a little sense of it. So you are in a PhD program right now. Can you describe a little bit of that?
Yeah, so I describe myself as an atmospheric chemist slash atmospheric scientist. I'm interested in studying air quality. I'm doing my PhD at the University of Utah, and right now I'm studying some air quality issues in the local Salt Lake City area. Super excited. I've just started my program after finishing my master's at MIT. In a similar area. And yeah, I guess that covers my what I'm doing right now.
Sure. Well, that's very impressive, your academic career and what you're studying. How did you get interested in that subject in the first place?
I started off studying theoretical mathematics when I was in college. And then I had this shift a couple years back, right at the tail end of my degree, where I was thinking that I wanted to do work that had a bit more of an impact on the world. Felt like climate change was sort of the big problem that I think that we need to be putting a lot of our best scientific minds into. And so I just kind of kept going in that direction.
Wow, that's fantastic. I mean, that's very important work, and that's exciting that you are contributing to that. I don't know, I was thinking about this before we started recording today, that you were in a PhD program, a science-based PhD program. And, you know, there's just last week, the guy interviewed, who's also an adult improver, is a surgeon. And so I'm just kind of very impressed with the caliber of guests that I have in terms of their academic backgrounds and frankly, just their intelligence. And it's kind of a funny thing to me bringing this into chess, because it's often said in chess that, oh, you know, for people who played a lot and do it, they know that, oh, just because you play chess, it doesn't mean like you're super intelligent necessarily or anything like that. And I don't dispute that. However, given the caliber of guests that I often have on this show and what they do outside of chess, they're often doing things with a lot of intellectual rigor. Do you think there's any connection there at all that, you know, maybe people who like chess are interested in some intellectual pursuits?
You know, I've talked about this recently with a friend because I was saying that I know a lot of people like to watch educational YouTube videos. And I was saying to them that I can't do that because I need my free time to do like relaxing activities and things like that. And that friend was telling me that they really loved watching these educational YouTube videos because it just kind of pumps them up and gets them really motivated and excited. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are people out there who are just sort of like a sponge, you know, like they are so excited about doing all these, I don't know, I don't want to say intellectual activities like we were saying when you preface this question, but are just really excited to learn and engage in activities that they have to put a lot of thinking into and are really excited. I want to say about knowledge or just kind of these cognitively intensive activities. For me personally, I've kind of found the opposite. As I was saying, I need my rest time from my research to be more relaxing activities. Like I'm also an artist, so sometimes I will work on my art. That also is cognitively intensive in some ways, but right. Not in the same way that chess is. And I think that it comes from just like kind of people being really excited and really wanting to tap into these kinds of activities where they have to think a lot or read a lot.
Right. And I mean, I definitely understand your point about, you know, once you've had a full day of work, I guess you could say, you know, that doing more intellectually rigorous activities is not necessarily super attractive at that point in the day. But do you feel like you would characterize yourself as someone who is drawn to intellectual pursuits or things that challenge your mind?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to make a definitive conclusion on, you know, chess players and intellectual pursuits necessarily. But man, it just, you know, with the guests that I interview, you know, not everyone I interview is a full-time chess player or does chess full-time.
Right.
And it's like, whenever I hear of what they do outside of that, it is often math and science and things of, you know, intense intellectual rigor. And so I don't know that playing chess makes you smart per se, but as much as I'd like to believe that sometimes, but it does seem like perhaps, you know, people who play chess aren't necessarily, they don't shy away from things that challenge their mind. I feel like I maybe say at least that. I don't know your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to phrase it, that they're not shying away from things that challenge you. I think it's also that it's a little bit adjacent, you know, like it's not quite what you would be doing on a day-to-day basis in your work, you know, if you're doing something math or science related, let's say, that it's still challenging in a similar kind of way, but it's not, you know, you're doing math and like science while playing chess.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about your just chess background and how you got into the game and things like that. I know you've done, you know, a lot in chess that isn't the typical casual player's experience, which is really exciting. And I can't wait to get to that stuff as well. But just kind of starting from the beginning, what got you into the game in the first place?
In the very, very beginning, my dad taught me how to play chess. I don't know how old I was, but I was pretty young. I remember like in third grade, I got really mad at my friend because we were playing chess at recess and she was telling me that the knight moved in this way. And I was like very insistent that it moved the correct way that the knight moves. And I started going to chess lessons when I was a young kid because I was one of those kids who was like very chatty. I couldn't sit still. And my parents found that chess was like the only time that I could really just sit still and listen to what was the teacher was going through. And my dad probably recognized it from when I played chess with him because we would play these like long all day games on weekends sometimes, because my dad hadn't learned chess to hadn't played tournament chess, so he hadn't used a timer before, a clock when he played. I think that also developed my love of strictly classical chess, because I kind of can't play much fast chess, and I just like love the long time, like 5 hour games in tournaments and things. And it probably stems from that like childhood game style that I had with my dad for so long. So I started playing just a little bit of chess when I was a kid. I'm from Long Island in New York, and I went to Long Island Chestnuts there, and they just really fostered a great space for me to play chess, and I had a really good time in those chess classes.
That's awesome. How frequent was that? Was that just like one class a week, or was it more than that?
Yeah, I think it was about one class a week.
Nice. I like hearing that you said that you're really into the classical time control in that format.
I bet you don't hear it too often from people, but
yeah, not as much as I want to. I mean, most people gravitate towards that I talk to, like who are, you know, amateurs, gravitate towards Blitz or Rapid as their favorite time controls. But so yeah, it is nice to hear that. I feel like I'm in a little bit of a minority, maybe a large minority, but still a minority in saying that.
Yeah, so. I also wonder if people have enjoyed these shorter time controls if they grew up playing a lot of chess in the computer. But yeah. Because I stem my like experiences from me having played those like hours long games with my dad, and then even when I played sort of in the chess clubs that I was in, we still played like rapid, you know, like 30, 45 minute games, because you know, you want kids to like sit there and actually think for a long while.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad that you kind of had that experience and exposure. And I think you're right. I would suspect that, you know, maybe people who grew up in the era of internet chess, so to speak, maybe have a preference for that. Yeah, that can make sense. In fact, I've even kind of noticed that it develops a preference for it, even if you didn't grow up with it, just because it's just so common and easily accessible to just go online and get a blitz game, rapid game, bullet game, you know, that people just kind of fall into that as the way of how they often play.
Yeah, I also think that I just did not play almost any online chess for the longest time. Like, if I think about how much online chess I've played, I feel like I only started playing a little bit of online chess, like, 2017. I don't know. I did, like, Tactics Online, but I didn't really get used to playing on, like, chess.com or Lee Chess when I was really active in tournament play, honestly.
So how did your chess life, you know, like before you were an adult, progress from there? I know you said you did these weekly classes and your dad introduced you. Did it ever evolve into something beyond that? Like, did you start going to tournaments? Did you like get a coach or any of those types of things?
So my chess club had a, more like a local tournament. And so every year, I don't know. I don't think it was every year. It was probably like every couple of months I started going to this local tournament. And for me, this was what I thought was sort of like the biggest chess tournament that I could possibly go to at the time. I had been used to going to these lessons every week, and then I would occasionally have these local lessons. But at some point in that club, when you reached a certain level, there were kids who got invited to be on this the club team for the US Amateur Team East, and that was like the next level, the next step up from like the local tournament for me, you know. And so for actually it's kind of funny, because that tournament is really important to my development as a chess player, because that was the tournament that I actually went to for like 6 years in a row. And into my college years even. Yeah. I started off going to that tournament, and it was just like really fun. I like the team aspect of of chess in those ways, like how your score adds up, and then also just having other people around you that are that you're not just like competing with everybody, you know, like you have your team with you. And I just associate that with like a really fun, like longer tournament. So that was like my introduction to actually having like a longer tournament. And you'd think that like, since I'm from Long Island, not too far away from New York City, that I would have started going to more events there, but it was still like a little far away enough. And, you know, I was a kid at the time, so it wasn't too easy for me to go to New York City. So I couldn't really like take advantage of those. So I remember like US Amateur Team East being like the big one. And then as I got like a bit older into college, I started going to bigger tournaments. Like I went to the Manhattan Open, the World Open a couple of years, but that sort of intersected with some of the chess journalism that I've done and making it easier to do some of those trips.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you had all those experiences with the U.S. Amateur East tournament, right?
Yeah, and they do them across the U.S., you know, some different areas. I'm not sure where you live if you've ever been to one, but it's a really fun tournament.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. So I have been to one. I'd like to have gone to more, and I will do more in the future. But I did U.S. Amateur Team North here. Mm-hmm. I'm in Chicago.
Okay.
And it was about 2 years ago, I think in 22, that I went there for the first time. And I couldn't agree more that it's just so nice to not be competing against everybody and to have, you know, like a support team essentially while you're there. It's a completely different experience, I think, and one that I probably prefer. I don't know about you.
I think it's also they build in these like fun aspects to it. Like they have like a costume contest, like a team name contest. Yep. And I think just all those together makes it a very different kind of space than most tournaments. And for a kid, I think that that's just so exciting.
Yeah. And I can attest as an adult, it was exciting. So I don't know what that says about me, but yeah. It is a fantastic experience. I wish there was more events like that. That's the only one I know of here in Chicago. I don't think they're particularly common in the US, but I think when someone has a chance to do it, they definitely show, because they are a great experience.
I wonder if they have a bit more of those in some of the big Scholastic tournaments, because you know, the kids who have like the school teams might still have that team aspect in normal tournaments that they go to together with the people at their school. But I actually never attended them when I was a kid. I didn't even know that. I don't think I knew that they even really existed.
Right. So yeah, I'd like to talk about your chess journalism career, which is really exciting. And I don't know that I've talked to too many people who have done that on the show, a few, but not many, and not in the way that you've done it. So you became a chess journalist in 2016. How did that opportunity arise for you? Were you seeking it out? How did that begin?
So I was asked by my friend, candidate master Alice Dong. She was looking for writers for this blog called Chess Summit, which her friend, who's also candidate master, Isaac Steinkamp, was running. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was a great little blog project while it ran. Isaac asked me to write for Chess Summit. And one of the first blog posts that I wrote was about my experience volunteering for the U.S. Chess School with IM Greg Shahadi. And the U.S. Chess School is this invite-only program that Greg runs for some of the top kids in the United States playing chess. And it's just a little camp kind of to help these kids work on their chess with other kids across the country. And I started doing some social media for Greg for the U.S. Chess School. I don't even remember how that happened. I think I kind of just reached out to him randomly. I don't remember. We might have been Facebook friends then, because I was just randomly Facebook friends with some chess people. And I wrote about my experience there at the U.S. Chess School. So Greg really liked my post, and he said if he had read it before, he would have pitched it to his sister, Jennifer Shahadi, who's a women GM/international master. If he had read it before and he knew that it would be that good, it's because Jen was an editor for the news section of the website for the U.S. Chess Federation at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of like I was on, I guess, Jen and Greg's radar or something for something that I had written. So I attended the World Chess Championship in 2016, which was in New York, where I was living at the time. Well, I was living in New York for most of my life, but I went to the tournament, really enjoyed it. And I wrote about the tiebreak system and generally liked it. And she asked me for a longer piece for US Chess. And then when I traveled to go to the US Amateur Teen East tournament, I asked Jen if it'd be possible to write about that. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of just kept going after that, where she would ask me if I'm going to this tournament, or I would ask her if I could cover this particular tournament. That's kind of how I started doing my writing. But I guess it was just the right people saw my writing for the first time and thought it was really good, and that I had unique insight that I guess other people hadn't really put in their articles before.
That's amazing. I love that story. I love how you got connected with Greg and then Jen, and it just sort of blossomed from there. So did you just instantly enjoy doing coverage of tournaments and writing about them? Did it surprise you at all that you enjoyed it that much? Or, I mean, what were your feelings about covering those events?
So I've been a strong writer for most of my life, and I really enjoyed writing it at the time. I think I never thought that I could apply it to something like chess, and that I had insights that were kind of exciting and I don't know, different. I really like the human aspect of chess, and I like getting to know people's stories and talking to people. And I think that probably fed into it. That I just really liked talking to people and learning about like their chess stories. Maybe I should have my own chess podcast. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think I'm really drawn to hearing people's experiences with chess and being able to put that out there somewhere in the world to like represent people's stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that was an aspect that I just really enjoyed about doing that kind of work.
Was that what constituted most of your chess journalism career, covering big tournaments, or were there other types of things that you reported on as well?
I would say that it wasn't necessarily big tournaments. So I went to a lot of Scholastic tournaments and I did a lot of those. But I also, I've covered tournaments such as the US Open, I think World Open, and things like that. But there are also some smaller things like, I don't know if it's still running, but there's a charity chess tournament that somebody in New York made where it was a big fundraiser for, I think it was for cancer or something at one point in time. It was like kind of a fundraiser tournament where they got some great chess players to be there. I know that they had Fabiano Caruana one year. And those were sort of like smaller, you know, like those feel-good stories, right? For me, I felt like there were a lot of limitations because I'm actually not a very good chess player, which is very surprising given like how many tournaments I was able to cover and things like that. But I think that was, again, like a unique perspective that I also brought into chess, because I think it kind of shows that I didn't necessarily need to be the best chess player, but I knew a lot about like chess culture, and I had watched like plenty of tournament commentary growing up as well. A lot of the like St. Louis Chess Club coverage for big tournaments and things like that. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily big tournaments, but and for those bigger tournaments, you know, I often had to sort of report on like the actual who won the tournament and things like that. But again, like I really liked interviewing a lot of the other players there who had really interesting stories, and it didn't necessarily have to be those super huge tournaments. I also did for Chess Kid like a player profile. I think I did one of Christopher Yu and maybe Abhimanyu Mishra. this is a couple years ago. So, but I think I did like two player profiles, and it was probably those two players. And so I try to vary it a little bit, you know, where it's not just, oh, this is what happened in this tournament, and like there were these, this is a story of like some of the people there, but tried to vary it with like Chess Kid and things like that.
I can relate because I interview on this show lots of players who are way better at chess than me. So I understand that perspective. So when you're going to these tournaments and covering them and interviewing players, again, this is something I can be sympathetic to, which is, you know, not knowing chess as well as the people that you're interviewing. What angle do you take in those scenarios, given that it's difficult to talk chess or comment on the games as, you know, as well as the players can?
First, I wanted to clarify when I say that I'm not a very good chess player, I mean that my rating has literally never crossed 1200. just because I didn't say that when you asked the previous question.
Right.
And, you know, I think that everyone has a different metric for like, what is a good chess player? But I think it maybe would soothe the listeners to know that like, I really wasn't very good at chess. and so a lot of times to compensate for a lot of the bigger tournaments, what I would do is I would partner with somebody, usually a titled player, that would give commentary on the actual games themselves. For example, I covered one of the National Scholastic tournaments, and Michael Rode provided commentary, and we ended up getting one of those Best of US Chess Chess Life Online awards. It was like in 2018. And so that helped give the more technical perspective to what I was reporting on. And in general, I guess my approach when I actually went to these tournaments and interviewed people was that I just walked around the tournament venue and just kind of talked to a lot of people. So I talked to everyone, including like chess coaches, like parents who are sitting there, kids, maybe kids who have finished their games, in addition to tracking down, you know, the people who are winning the tournament and everything. Then I would just listen to their stories and what they had to say. And I would say that I never really started writing that first day because I was just sort of listening to everyone's stories. And then it's kind of weird. It's like a narrative sort of appears before me after I talk to enough people, and like what is sort of the story of this particular tournament. And when the tournament comes to an end, you know, there's the people who win the tournament, and usually I have to go talk to them and get some of the expertise on the games that were played. I think occasionally some of the people who actually won the game, won the tournament, provided commentary and like annotated games. It was a way for them to also put their impact on the articles that I wrote, to have like their perspective from their games themselves. And yeah, that's sort of the process that I took when I was like at these tournaments and writing about them.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's great. That's just a really effective way of doing it, I think, you know, to combine your insights and perspectives with a title player doing that dynamic. That makes a lot of sense. So you've been at events where there's been some chess legends like Magnus Carlsen and Garry Kasparov. Having been at some, you know, events where there's these incredible opportunities to see them, maybe even interview them, do you have a favorite memory from your chess journalism career?
So I have two, and they're quite a bit different. So the first one is being able to go to the all-girls nationals tournament. Mm-hmm. I only went once. It was held in Chicago. I don't know if it's held in Chicago every year, but it was held in Chicago that year. I used to get those Chess Life magazines, you know, and they all have the advertisements for tournaments and things. I remember when I was in high school, seeing an advertisement for All Girls Nationals, and I really wanted to go so badly. But as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I had started off, you know, going to those like local tournaments, and then I had my dad to drive me to New Jersey to go to like Amateur Team East. We only really went to tournaments that were nearby, and so I wanted to go so badly to All Girls Nationals, and I never got to go as a kid. And I was really excited when I got the opportunity to go as a chess journalist, because it was kind of like a fulfillment of something that I had really wanted to do as a kid, as a girl growing up playing chess, honestly. It was just something that, like, I could see myself on the other side. Like, this is a way that I still got something out of a dream that I had as a kid. So that was really impactful. And I would guess that a lot of girls and women who grew up playing chess might have a similar kind of tale in going to, like, some kind of all girls tournament in this way. And they do a really good job in supporting these kinds of tournaments. And I saw a lot more of them, I think, when I was in college doing this chess journalism. And I'm just really glad that they exist. So that was a really good experience for me. The second thing, much shorter of a story, FM Ethan Lee came up to me at a tournament once, and he told me that he really liked my articles. And it was the first time that I kind of felt like, well, one, somebody was reading them, and two, that he very selflessly came up to me, recognized me, and it just made me feel like I had a place in chess. That you know, as I mentioned, like, I'm not a very good chess player. Like, it always, like, early on in my, like, chess journalism career, I think that it really bothered me, and to hear that validation from somebody that that they recognized me and that they liked my work was just really life-changing for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that story. Collectively, with all the experiences that you had as a chess journalist, all the events that you covered, people that you've met, it gives you a perspective and experience in chess that a lot of the typical adult club players don't have. So what would you say are some insights that you have on that scene of competitive chess, or maybe even just chess in general, that are unique from having had those experiences?
I think from talking to all these different kinds of people at chess tournaments gave me an appreciation for how many non-chess players are involved with putting an event together. I mean, they can be chess players, but, you know, I'm talking about, like, the staff who work at the tournaments, the tournament directors. I mean, I was a tournament director at the Marshall Chess Club, but so I would obviously purposely look out for them, you know. But I played Millionaire Chess in 2016, and I think that Amy and Maurice really gave that event, like, so much life and vibrance, and it added a lot to it. And meeting, like, chess parents and knowing it, they have a significant impact on, like, bringing their kids to the tournaments, like, talking to, trying to figure out, like, which tournaments that their kids are going to go to and things like that. When you're at a tournament as a player, I feel like you can get really in your own head, like, your own bubble, and you're just hanging out with your friends and not really, like, seeing all the people around you that, like, come together to be able to make chess happen and to play chess at these places. I will admit, although I feel like throughout my time as a chess journalist, I got to know a lot of people at all levels, but I did fangirl quite a bit at, like, a lot of the famous chess players pretty early on. I think the other thing that I would say is that for top chess players specifically, one interesting perspective that I got was that for some people, like, chess just consumes so much of their lives. Sometimes it can be a bad thing. Like, I knew this grandmaster who wanted to do other aspects professionally, but they kind of felt really stuck with just being in chess. Other times it can be a really good thing, because it makes me appreciate, like, how people can be sustained by this niche, you know, game, and how excitement for the game just kind of drives people for, like, a really long time. And I've also seen how chess has changed people's lives pretty significantly, especially at, like, the titled levels. So one example is that I actually saw, I think on TikTok, that FM Wesley Wang is a filmmaker now. And they were talking about, because he had this, like, one film that he put on YouTube that just, like, blew up. And he I don't know, I saw he was, like, going to, like, some film festivals and all these things. And He raised a lot of money to produce these films. And people on this like TikTok were saying that, oh, he's just successful because he comes from money. He's rich. I don't think he's like comes from a super rich family, by the way. But according to the video that I was watching, he actually raised a lot of that money from teaching chess. Like he taught enough chess lessons and a lot of that money came in and that he was able to fund this film. And I think that's just a really nice thing. And I didn't expect to see it. This was like a couple months ago that I just saw this. And WGM/IM Dorsa Dorakshani is also one of these people that stands out to me in terms of like how chess has changed her life, because she's talked about how she was able to leave Iran through chess and now she's in medical school, and like how chess was sort of the way that she was able to do all that. And I think that is even with people who aren't like titled players, I don't know, but just appreciating like how chess has changed and shaped people's lives in this way and still continues to, even for people who aren't so actively playing chess as much. And I think that it just shows like chess, how it has helped me appreciate chess as sort of like a vehicle of change in this way. And sometimes, you know, we don't have to think about it so largely like this, right? Like sometimes it's just a fun game, but sometimes it's not. Like now they have all these programs for people in prison to learn chess. I don't know, just like all these kinds of initiatives. And it just shows that chess can just be really far reaching in all these ways that you don't really expect, you know?
Those are great insights, first of all. And I love your last point about just the impact that chess can make on people's lives, because you're right. I mean, it can be, for some people, just a game they play and it's just some fun on the side and it never rises above that. But for other people, it can be life-changing, and if not even quite life-changing, just very influential in your life. And I appreciate that you highlight that, because you know, I hear both. I hear that chess is just a game, and I hear that, you know, like chess is life. But I kind of go back and forth, and I think the truth is it can be either one. But I think it's easier to underestimate that it can be so much more than a game for a lot of people. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I know that you began writing for US Chess and, you know, going like kind of heavy on the chess journalism at a time when you'd already chosen a career path with your college major. But just hypothetically, do you think you could see yourself having had, you know, enjoyed a full-time career in chess journalism if the timing had been different? Or do you think it was always better suited for you as a side project?
For me personally, it was not something that I ever really wanted to do full time. I mean, you say that I had like chosen a career path by then, but that's not entirely true. At that point in time, when I was starting to get into this chess journalism and doing a lot of things in the chess world, including being a tournament director as well, I was thinking about law school. I also had an art major. I was interning with a fashion designer and working like New York Fashion Weeks. And then toward the tail end, that's when I started studying math. Toward the tail end, that's when I started studying mathematics, and I wanted to do research in mathematics specifically. And I've always been the type of person who's interested in a lot of different things, and chess was sort of a part of that puzzle. But I really only did it because it was super fun for me. And I do think that it is possible for people who are really motivated about chess to get involved in it full time from like a media perspective. I mean, there are photographers like Leonard Udis. He's great, and he does that full time. I believe. there are people who are, I'm sure there are people who also do the chess journalism thing full time, or maybe even like do tournament directing full time and do their own teaching and things like that. And I think that there are a lot of avenues for people to have a chess career and to stay in that area. But for me, I think that in that time, I was doing a lot of exploration, a lot of different things. And they were all things that I was super excited about. But a lot of them didn't really seem like they were going to turn into these full-time endeavors.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. So yeah, I'm kind of curious about your chess life as it is right now. I know that, you know, you're focused on your PhD program, and that's huge. I mean, that's a massive endeavor. But is there room for chess at all these days for you? And if so, what does that look like?
So a little while back, I started thinking about if I wanted to get a little bit into chess writing again. I had some conversations with Jennifer Chahadi. I think I was like trying to think about writing about this one event that happened. I think I even went to it because it was like a virtual thing, and didn't end up writing anything out of it. I think it just got really busy. And I had like a couple other projects that I thought of in that time, things I was interested in looking at. For example, at the Marshall, I was researching about the past women employees of the Marshall Chess Club. I was thinking about doing a piece related to that. And I also had thought about like some kind of blog to highlight more of these like human stories. And as I've been talking about kind of this whole interview. And I questioned at the time, like, would anyone even care to read like this kind of little blog of these kinds of stories of people talking about like what chess means to them and things like that, you know, like once it's not like on the big media screen, you know, in like US chess and things like that, or not like specifically tied to some kind of tournament coverage. But I thought a little bit about these kinds of things. One of my friends was like trying to convince me to get into streaming, because I really love playing chess variants, and I've played a lot of them with title players, since I can't play normal chess with them, you know. and all these things. I am super COVID cautious though, so I don't think that I would go back to like normal tournament play, for example. Mm-hmm. I thought about having more COVID safer tournaments. One friend had like expressed this to me, how she also wishes that she could play a bit more chess, but doesn't feel like it's very COVID safe. And it's kind of hard because, you know, like as we expressed earlier, like more than anything, I love classical chess, and you know, like I don't really like playing it on the screen, and that doesn't really happen very often either. I'm a certified Blitz hater. You know, I just like live for those 5-hour games, you know, and I think that's is really hard for me to get. But I do have a group of friends that I occasionally get together with and play a little bit of chess. Usually it's just like Bughouse that we play together. So I'm trying to build like a little bit more of that into my life. I don't know if any of the like projects that I thought of would ever come to fruition. But I think that there's also no like timeline for any of it, you know. These are things that I could always go back to in the future, right? Like, you know, maybe chess isn't a big part of my life right now, but that doesn't mean it can't change in the future. I don't know if a lot of the Endel improvers that you talk to, maybe a lot of them didn't have like the opportunity to play like these classic tournaments as a kid, but you can still get into it as an adult and like later, and there's so much to explore. And so I wouldn't say that it's like definite that I'm not doing any more chess ever. We'll see if any of them ever ends up happening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just like hearing that, you know, you have some ideas in mind of, you know, what you might do in chess in the future, and you know, some different possibilities there. That's very cool. So Vanessa, I close all of my interviews with a segment that's just a series of fun questions. They're a bit shorter in nature, and you know, just to have some fun on kind of like rapid fire chess questions, so to speak. So the first question: knights or bishops?
Bishops.
Nice. So the second question, we talked about your favorite time control being classical. So let me try a different version.
Well, actually, I didn't tell you exactly which time control it is. I mean, yeah. I would say that it's the one that like US Amateur Team East has used like forever, which is like, I think it's like 2 hours for 40 moves and then an extra hour after that.
Okay.
Very specific.
Right. Yeah, that was what I was going to ask you, was the specific time control within classical. So that's cool to hear that. Who is your favorite player of all time?
Magnus Carlsen.
Nice. If you could play any of the top players in the world right now, who would it be?
Well, then I'm so bad at chess. How am I supposed to play with them? I can play a variant with them, you know?
Sure. It can be any format.
I'm going to say Magnus Carlsen again. I played him in a simul. That was cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I got to play with him in the simul.
That's amazing. If you could hang out with any chess celebrity for an evening, who would it be?
Ooh, it's a different question. You know, like I don't think I would automatically see Magnus Carlsen, right?
Right. So this could be just like hanging out for a meal or something like that. Yeah.
You know, from the fact that I haven't seen a lot of my chess friends in a while, I'm going to go with Eric Rosen.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I love
he's
Eric.
Great. He's so nice. And we've had really great times together.
Would you say you have a chess vice? Well, okay, so it's not going to be bullet because you don't even like blitz. But
Bughouse.
Bughouse, yeah.
And I would say 5-minute time control Bughouse. Because chess.com, now you can only find games that are like 3-minute Bughouse. And I'm not used to that because I've only played 5-minute Bughouse from like childhood till now.
Okay. And my last question, if a chess genie existed and could grant you any one chess wish, what would it be?
I originally wrote an answer for this when I wrote my notes for this interview questions thing. But I think I'm going to change my answer. My original answer was that I wish that the Marshall Chess Club was bigger physically. My one wish would be that Fabiano Caruana finally won the World Chess Championship.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I want to second that one. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, that's a great way to finish our interview. Vanessa, I really enjoyed chatting with you. Loved hearing about all of your experiences as a chess journalist and what it's meant to you and, you know, just how it's impacted your life. So I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show and chatting with me, and I had a great time.
Yeah, this was really fun and really different. I don't know. I think it kind of made me feel excited about chess again and like a little nostalgic. So maybe I'll have to do a little bit more thinking on if I want to pick up something chess related, whether it's playing more games with friends or doing something more bigger than that. So really thankful that you invited me to be here and to talk about chess.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, and I couldn't be more delighted to hear that it got your mind thinking about some ways to incorporate a little more chess into your life. That would be awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, Vanessa. It's great chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of my business, Adult Chess Academy. And that has a website with the same name if you want to look for it. You can also find me being way too active on Twitter by searching my username, Lona_chess. See you next week.